Mr. Cormier, do you wish to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, I'll try to save 5 minutes for rebuttal if I could.
Very well.
I've got a timer here in front of me. I'll try to keep an eye on that as well.
All right, good. And I'm doing the same on this end. So we're ready when you are, sir.
All right, thank you very much. And again, for the record, my name is Dana R. Cormier, and I'm here on behalf of John Wilkes Trent Sr. in this appeal. I will focus my argument, if I could, on just the first issue, since there seems to be a little dispute regarding the second issue on the double jeopardy and the error in the sentencing order. Also, unless there are any questions about the fact, I'd like to focus on the first issue, my argument on discussing the case law and specifically distinguishing the Mourning Court of Appeals case, which the Commonwealth relies on in its brief, from the Allen Supreme Court case, which I relied upon in my brief.
Right, focusing then on the slight corroboration issue.
Exactly, thank you.
Yeah, and I think, I know that we've all read the materials, and so that's fine. Let me just ask, though, on the, do you view this as a need for a remand to the circuit court for resentencing, given that the bottom line effect is going to be the same on your client?
You mean with respect to the second issue?
Yes.
I don't think there's going to be a change. Obviously, there's not going to be a change in the actual sentence, and there may be a remand just to really correct the final sentencing order.
All right, fair enough.
That's how I would envision any correction of that for the second issue.
Okay.
In the Allen case, as I cited, it's a 2014 Virginia Supreme Court case on the corroborative issue with respect to the confession. In that case, the Supreme Court did quite a detailed analysis of the corpus delicti rule. The facts of that case, briefly, were that a grandfather had confessed to his daughter about sexually abusing the grandson. And at trial, the grandfather didn't testify. The evidence of his confession came in. The court found that there was insufficient evidence to establish the corpus delicti of the crime based upon the evidence presented by the daughter, the testimony presented by the daughter. The daughter testified that she and her son lived in the basement apartment with the grandfather, where the grandfather lived upstairs. She talked about opportunities the grandfather had by sleeping with the child, wrestling with the child, but she didn't testify as to anything regarding the specific details of the sexual conduct that the father had allegedly confessed to. And the court found that there was insufficient corroboration of the corpus delicti, the actual aggravated sexual battery, on the grandson, and therefore it dismissed the charge. One thing I'd like to point out that the Supreme Court is, or at least to me, the Supreme Court is clarifying is that simply because the certain circumstances of the confession are corroborated, I think the court focuses on the corpus delicti of the actual crime being committed needing to be corroborated to distinguish maybe some earlier case law on that. I know there have been arguments, at least in the trial court and perhaps from the Commonwealth in this case, that simply because in this case Nathan Ferrier corroborated other tangential details of Mr. Trent's confession, I don't think that would be sufficient under Allen because, as I'll argue in a little more detail later, Mr. Ferrier did not corroborate that any sexual contacts between he and Mr. Trent occurred.
Well, you agree, this is Judge Huff,
yes.
You agree, don't you, that the standard remains, though, that it's only slight corroboration?
I absolutely agree that the standard is slight corroboration, but I think, based on Allen, the slight corroboration has to be slight corroboration of the corpus delicti of the actual crime, not merely corroboration of other circumstances that are relevant to the confession. And I think, and then we're switching to the Mourning case, which the Commonwealth relies on in its brief. That 2002 case, with all due respect to the Court of Appeals, I do not think would survive the type of analysis that Allen requires that we make now with uncorroborated confessions. That being said, even if the Mourning case were to survive the Allen case, I think that it can be distinguished from the case that we have before us today. In Mourning, the issue was the victim testified and denied that any sexual contact had happened between her and the defendant. The trial court found that, or disbelieved the victim on that, and therefore found that because she was lying, therefore held that the sexual contact occurred. Again, I don't think, I'm not sure that that would survive the Allen analysis, but even if it did, we don't have anything like that to establish that, at least if you're saying that she's lying, therefore you have some sort of inference that the sexual contact occurred. We don't have that in this case, so I think we can distinguish Mr. Trent's case from the Mourning case on those grounds, even if, Mourning were to survive the Allen analysis.
Let me ask you this. This is Judge Hoff again. Don't we have in this case, though, the circumstance where the victim gets flustered, just like in the Mourning case, and instead of denying that there was anything of a sexual nature going on, concedes, yes, there was something sexual sexual going on, but I don't want to talk about it. So
it didn't go that far. What happened in the trial was that the prosecutor said, talking about he and the other boys being in Mr. Trent's basement, where Nathan Ferry admitted the exchange of drugs and narcotics that occurred there, when the prosecutor said, did sex stuff happen, Mr. Ferry said, yes. Well, the problem is what sex stuff happened. We know that there was some sort of masturbation going on between Mr. Trent and Mr. Ferry that other witnesses talked about, not mutual masturbation, but individual, that was insufficient to establish the indecent liberties charge, which the trial court struck that.
Let me ask you, this is Judge Austin. In light of Allen, what is the nature of particularity or specificity you would suggest needs to be presented to satisfy Allen's circumstance? Because oftentimes when you're dealing with minors, they're not able to testify in any great detail or with any great specificity as to what occurred because of their tender years. What particular kind of evidence would you think would be necessary in a case such as that?
Well, are you talking in general or in this case?
In general.
In general, I know I've been part of many cases where minor victims have testified with sufficient detail about, for example, his mouth touched this part of my body, or this part of his body touched this part of my body. So I don't think that it's terribly difficult to establish the specific details, because in this case, to establish the charge against the common knowledge charge, you specifically had to establish that Mr. Trent committed a fellatio on someone 13 or under. And we don't, whatever sex stuff that Nathan Ferrier said happened, they said sex stuff happened, yes it did. I just don't think that is enough to establish that fellatio occurred between he and Mr. Trent under the circumstances. No other witnesses said anything about fellatio or witnessing that. Now, I understand the court's concern. I think it was a dissenting opinion in Allen's concern as well about how, will this be difficult for minor victims? Well, in cases involving minor victims, I respectfully submit that it can be done. Even if the minor victim is unable to communicate, there are ways to do it. And I don't think that it would be much terribly difficult. In this specific case...
Your analysis would suggest, if I'm putting words in your mouth, please correct me, your analysis would suggest that if you have a confession on the part of the defendant in a case, and there is reluctance to testify with any particularity by the alleged victim, the Commonwealth would not be able to carry its case under any circumstance.
No. I mean, were there other witnesses? Is there other circumstances?
Assuming there are no other witnesses. Assume it's one of these, one person says one thing, one person confesses, and the other person says nothing. Similar to what we have here. If you have reluctance, and if you have a reluctance on the part of the victim, and a confession on the by the defendant, and but you have circumstances and opportunity and things such as that, that would not suffice under your analysis.
It would not. I don't think it would suffice under the analysis in Allen. and on the Phillips case upon which Allen cites. So my analysis, I think, would be consistent with both the Supreme Court's analysis in Allen and the Phillips case, where in that case you had a victim that refused to testify, and unfortunately they couldn't approve the corpus delicti in that case as well. So, yes, it may be, you know, again, slight corroboration is slight, but in this case we have no corroboration. So that's how I would
No particularized corroboration, I guess, would be a better way of saying it.
Yeah, I think corroboration needs to be slight, but in this case we have no corroboration. So I think I'm a little under my 5 minutes to trying to save, if I could save a little bit of time for rebuttal, unless there are any further questions.
No, that's fine.
Thank you.
Ms. Bourne?
May it please the court. Of course, you know, in Allen, the purpose of the corpus delicti rule is so that we don't have false confessions. And in Allen, there was no corroboration because there was just a mere opportunity with something that was otherwise perhaps innocent behavior, you know, just being in the same bed. And that's why they said that in Allen, that the mere opportunity only shows, doesn't satisfy the rule, because it's just as consistent with commission as non-commission. But that isn't the case here. This case is unlike Allen because there was corroboration of that sex stuff happened, that sexually inappropriate things happened. And there was a full confession. So the corpus delicti, if you will, was established by the confession and only needed slight corroboration, which
but
came
by getting back to Mr. Cormier's analytical perspective, as he suggests by Allen, there could be all kinds of, and again, it's a delicate subject, sex stuff that could happen which would not necessarily fall into the category of the sex stuff necessary to prove this kind of case.
But, Your Honor, again, here this is different from what happened in Allen, and it actually is, and I would argue that Mourning that would survive after Allen, but it actually is more than what occurred in Mourning, if you will, because here he acknowledged when asked about the specific incident that some sex stuff happened, and we had the defendant who testified at trial, unlike what happened in Allen. So the court, there was evidence, the court was in a position to see a videotape of the confession, which I would say is even stronger evidence because it's not just a reported confession, which of course could be, you know, false based on somebody not telling the truth about the confession, which is I think what happened perhaps maybe, or the allegations were in Allen. But here you have a videotaped confession where the court can for itself observe what the defendant was saying. And then you have a victim who was, by the way, corroborated by other young men who testified about inappropriate behavior that occurred at the home, and then who acknowledged that sex stuff happened, which was the slight corroboration. Now, the corpus delicti rule and the slight corroboration, that corroboration is not required to corroborate the elements, all of the elements of the crime. And I think what the defendant is arguing is that you would have to corroborate all of the elements. It's just that there has to be corroboration of the confession, and that, I would argue, did occur here, not just because of the testimony of the other young men who observed this young man in a state of undress with the defendant, but also his acknowledgement that some sex stuff happened, plus the defendant's own testimony, which the court was free to disbelieve and view as independent evidence of guilt. And, of course, the purpose also, and I think the difficulty is that it's not just that young people will have the trouble sometimes testifying because they are reluctant, but they might also be just too young to testify. So this sort of blanket rule, even when you have a full confession, about every element having to be corroborated would result in a lot of cases being a lot of people being acquitted that should not be acquitted. So in this case, I don't believe that Allen requires a reversal in this case. The court heard the evidence at trial and found that it was slightly corroborated, the confession was slightly corroborated. So for those reasons, I would ask that you affirm.
Very well. Mr. Cormier, your remaining 5 minutes.
Thank you. Let's be a little more detailed here about what the corpus delicti rule requires. And reading right from Allen, which cites the Moore case, the corpus delicti rule requires that the Commonwealth introduce evidence independent of the extrajudicial confession to prove that the confessed crime actually occurred. That is, to prove the corpus delicti. And we don't have anything to prove that the alleged fellatio between Mr. Wilkes and Nathan Ferrier occurred. None of the other... Yes.
But if we're... Excuse me, this is Judge Huff again. If we are bound by mourning, in mourning, it was the sex act that was specifically denied, and it was the corroboration that was sufficient corroboration to corroborate the confession, all dealt with the other details surrounding the event. Don't we have that?
No. I disagree. What we have here is that certainly there was a lot of illegal and immoral things going on in the basement of that house.
And
all we have regarding whether Mr. To corroborate the purported confession on the ratio between Mr. Trent and Nathan Ferrier is, did sex stuff happen down in that basement with Mr. Ferrier saying yes? I don't agree. Now, in mourning, what you would have is that the court, because the victim lied and said no sex happened, according to the trial court, the court disbelieved the victim and said then sex stuff between the victim and the defendant happened. But what we don't have that here. We don't have, no one's alleged that Mr. Ferrier lied. Even if he lied, then we don't get anywhere on the confession. Sex stuff happened. Between whom? What specifically? What specific type of sex stuff happened to support the carnal knowledge charge against Mr. Trent? We have none of that. We have none of that from any of the other witnesses. We certainly know about...
So your argument would essentially say that a fact finder is not able under Allen to draw any reasonable inferences from the alleged victim's statement sex stuff happened when coupled with your confession.
Yes, because just as in Allen, fact finder couldn't infer that just because the grandfather, based upon what the daughter said, had slept with the child, had wrestled with the child, had lived with the child, none of those facts established the corpus delicti of whether the grandfather had sexual contact with the child.
But isn't what we have a step further than that, in that there is an acknowledgement on the part of the victim that there was some sexual intonations regarding the contact between him and your client?
I disagree. He doesn't say that. All he says is the sex stuff happened there. And he says, yes, there's no way you can infer between whom, even, if you look at the record closely in the questioning.
So you'd be suggesting that to the extent that it's corroborative, it's too slight to even satisfy the slight corroboration standard.
Yes, exactly. And with that, unless there are any further questions, I thank you for the opportunity to argue on behalf of Mr. Trent.
Thank you very much to both of you. The case is submitted, and the court will now go into a conference. Thank you.
Thank you very
much.